Well, Election Day is almost here. Check that. Election Day has been happening for weeks. Rather than the tradition of going to the polls on the first Tuesday of November, as you just heard Hannah Haynes say in the newscast, 1.7 million individuals have already voted by early voting or by mail. That's 10 times the number of early votes that are cast in a typical presidential election year, and is nearly half the total number of votes cast in the presidential election 4 years ago total. Every day, some new court case affecting early ballots is being decided, including a decision by the U.S. Supreme Court earlier this week affecting Wisconsin's mail-in ballots. So what does that all mean to you and your vote? Well, that's our focus today as we examine vote integrity and voter access in western Wisconsin in the midst of a pandemic today on the West Side. Good morning to you. I'm Dean Kallenbach. My guests today are Ellen Oakes of Menominee. Ellen is the co-president of the League of Women Voters of the Greater Chippewa Valley. Ellen Oakes, welcome to the West Side.
Thank you, Dean.
Also with us today, Deanne Cook, the Republican County Clerk from Barron County. Deanne Cook, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And also Sarah Godlewski of Eau Claire. She's midway through her first term as Wisconsin's state treasurer and is a member of Vote Safe Wisconsin, a bipartisan effort to assure safe and secure voting in the state. Sarah Godlewski, good to have you along today.
It's great to be here, Dean.
So have you submitted your vote already, or are you planning to go to the polls in person on Tuesday? Are you worried that your vote might not get counted? Well, join the conversation today at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. That's ideas@wpr.org. So, Deanne Cook, I'd like to start with you because I know that we can only have you for a relatively short time today. We really appreciate your tearing away from your duties on the eve of the election. And as I said, the election's kind of already happening. Can you talk broadly about what the election responsibilities are for a county clerk?
Well, a county clerk will be obviously taking in all the results from all of the municipalities on election night, and then it's our responsibility to post those out for the world to see. There's a whole lot of that's done prior to the election, but on election day, we do a lot of maybe fielding of calls with municipal clerks with different issues going on, but our biggest work starts when the polls close and the results start coming in.
So this is not your first presidential election cycle as Barron County Clerk. How does it compare so far to the 2016 election?
Well, there's certainly a significant amount more of absentee voting. Typically in Barron County, our voters, we have very low absentee up until now, typical COVID. And so we would just have a lot of election day voters. Our numbers are significantly up for absentees. I still think that we will have probably, at our largest municipalities, we'll still have probably close to 50% election day turnout. And the smaller the municipality, the higher election day turnout they'll be here in Barron County.
We just finished the World Series, which is the pinnacle of the Major League Baseball season. For county clerks and for public radio hosts, Election Day is our World Series. Deanne Cook, can you give us details of what happens on Election Day, especially election night, in the county clerk's office? Maybe give us kind of a timeline of what happens in what order.
Well, obviously everyone knows that the polls close at 8 o'clock, and on a normal, smaller election, we can start getting results in by probably 20 after 8:30. For this big election, I don't expect that we'll see any results before 9 o'clock. There's just a whole lot more for the municipal clerks to do on their end before they can report to us. And Barron County is maybe just a little bit different than a lot of larger counties. We don't do any kind of modeming in of our results. Our results come directly from our municipal clerks, either by phone, or they could fax them to me, or they could scan a sheet that we give them and email to us. But nothing comes modem per se. So we wait for those results to come in. I've got a whole staff that's on duty that night. My deputy and I enter those results into what's called the Canvas Reporting System. It's actually a system from the Wisconsin Election Commission that where we post all of our results, and then those results ultimately end up out on our website. We have actually an IT person in the background that uploads those to our website.
Now, when we at WPR and other news sources cover election night, we're counting on those numbers posted online by county clerks to get the results we report on the air. You mentioned might not have anything up before 9 because the municipal clerks will be so busy counting those ballots. We often have complete results from the counties by midnight. Do you see that changing in 2020?
I wouldn't be surprised. And like I said, in a normal year, I would say we'd be done by probably even 11 o'clock, even a presidential. But there's nothing normal about 2020, as we all know. And so I do expect we could be later than normal. It's very hard to say how much later it will be, but I'd be very surprised if we're done by midnight.
Now, I mentioned earlier that we've had 10 times the early votes cast in this election than in a normal presidential race. What effect will that have?
It will take more time for municipal clerks to process those ballots because each and every one of those has to be processed by a poll worker. People call what we have in Wisconsin early voting, but Wisconsin truly does not have early voting. Wisconsin has absentee voting. So when a person goes to vote absentee, they actually put their votes on a ballot, which is sealed in an envelope. On election day, a poll worker basically assumes the identity of that person, states their name and their address at the poll, gets a number, opens that envelope, and casts their ballot.
Oh, really? Oh, that's an interesting idea. I wasn't realize that's how the process worked. So
that's exactly how it works.
Yeah, so that's the case whether the ballot is mailed in or at a drop box. How does it work for people who come in and literally vote in person early? Is that the same process? Do they fill out that same form?
The same thing when people come to vote. For example, since October 20th has been what's called in-person absentee voting. So the only difference between that and mail-in voting is that the person's going to the municipal clerk's office or the polling place, and they're actually taking their ballot, they're filling their ballot out, they're putting it in that envelope and leaving it with the clerk. The only difference is they're not mailing it.
So does that person standing in for the poll worker standing in, does that happen during the day before 8 o'clock, or does that wait until 8 o'clock to happen?
No, absentees are processed all day during the day.
Okay.
They don't wait till 8 o'clock. In fact, our largest municipality, I'm guessing, will probably have possibly even up to 20 people all day long processing those absentee ballots in order to try to get them processed before 8 o'clock. Now, that there may be incidents where they just simply could not get it done by 8 o'clock, so they'll have to actually do that afterwards. The ideal, though, is to have everything processed by 8 o'clock.
So,
I believe that's realistic in Barron County. Now, I can't speak for your larger counties because that maybe isn't realistic for them.
So do those people like just stand in line like a normal person would, or do you wait till lulls in the process for that to happen? How does that play out?
Well, in a perfect world, they would wait for lulls, but the thing is it's likely that not happens.
Yeah.
So, you know, a poll worker, for example, could take a handful of absentee ballots, and when their turn is up to the line, they would state the names and addresses of several of those absentee ballots, and then they would open them and go put them in the machine.
Some Democrats proposed that absentee ballots could be counted after the election by up to 6 days. On Monday, the U.S. Supreme Court struck that idea down. But that's been kind of going back and forth in the courts for the last few weeks. How much does uncertainty caused by that court case, how much does that affect county clerk's office like yours?
Well, the way the ruling is right now is what we've been doing for a very long time.
Yeah.
So that doesn't really affect us much because this is exactly what we're used to. If the ruling would have been where absentee ballots would have had to have been accepted after the fact, that would have meant municipal boards having to reconvene to count those. But the process that's in place right now is what we've been doing for several years. So this is the norm to us.
Sure. If someone in Barron County has received an absentee ballot but hasn't yet mailed it, what are their options today?
Well, I would recommend that they either bring that to their municipal clerk today, or I would recommend that they bring that to the polls themselves. I don't think it's a good idea to throw one in the mail at this point. I think bringing it in person would be the best option at this point.
So I want to bring our other guests in for a bit. The main reason for all these early votes, of course, and we haven't really talked about it yet, but it's the coronavirus pandemic. People wanting to avoid in-person contact at the polls. Governor Evers tried to postpone the April primary in order to allow people more time to vote absentee. He was concerned that in-person voting would become a super spreader event. But the Republican leadership in the legislature went to the state Supreme Court, overturned that order, and there indeed were in-person elections on the scheduled day in April. Sarah Godlewski, it did turn out that the April election didn't really result in a new outbreak. So how does that experience translate to next week's in-person voting?
I mean, I think people remember seeing those vivid long lines being in Milwaukee where people were waiting for hours in the cold to cast their vote, and they don't need to do that. I mean, they have absentee options, whether, as Deanne was explaining, they do it in person or they actually drop it off at different locations. But I think they want to make sure their voice and their vote is counted, because we know the road to the White House runs through Wisconsin, and they want to make sure that their voice matters. And I think that's why we've seen such an increase in absentee, so we don't relive the past as we saw in Milwaukee.
Ellen Oaks, the League of Women Voters, is celebrating its 100th anniversary this year, and it's been a constant advocate for the rights of voters. As co-president of the Chippewa Valley chapter, what are your main concerns about this 2020 election?
Well, a big concern for us has been that there is so much uncertainty being almost promoted by events and news reports, and making the voters nervous is not good for the election, probably. League of Women Voters is in the business of ensuring that everyone can safely and securely access the ballot box. And we promote absentee ballots. We've been promoting them heavily during COVID to reduce the pressure and stress on the polling places on election day. Other concerns for the league are breaking down voting barriers, things that prevent people from wanting to come in, reaching out to prospective voters, making sure they're getting registered and they know how to navigate the voter system, which really, you know, the nuts and bolts are solid. Wisconsin has a good voter system. So apart from redistricting issues and gerrymandering and things like that, that's also something that concerns us. Mm. But reducing voter confusion is a huge part of what League has been doing for 100 years.
Let's talk about that specifically. During the first presidential debate, President Trump said that the 2020 election is going to be a fraud like you've never seen, and he's made similar comments in the last several weeks, saying that mail-in ballots can be manipulated. So Ellen Oaks, is the League of Women Voters concerned about fraud in this election?
Well, everyone is always concerned about potentially subverting the voting process, but there's no evidence to support those statements. The amount of fraud is infinitesimal in our voting in Wisconsin.
The president has also been encouraging his supporters to go to the polls on Tuesday to become unofficial poll watchers to make sure things are on the up and up. Sarah Godlewski, has the bipartisan Vote Safe Wisconsin coalition that you're a part of taken a position on that idea at all?
No, we have not. I mean, really why Vote Safe started, Dean, was after the April election when we saw long lines and just a lot of confusion. Elected leaders across the state were worried because we know voting is a critical cornerstone of our democracy. And so we started thinking, what can we do? And so as elected officials, we really thought there's two things. It goes back to a lot of what, honestly, Ellen was talking about. We want to make sure that we're educating voters on information, where to go, how to register. But it's also about outreach and going to voters where they are and reaching out to them proactively so they have the information at their fingertips to make the best voting decisions for themselves.
So the presidential race isn't the only one on the ballot. If you've been listening to the 15 debates we've aired over the past 4 months on this show, you'll know that there are also congressional and state legislative races on the ballot, but the fall ballot also includes county officers like county clerks. And Deanne Cook, you're running unopposed on the Republican ticket in Barron County this fall, which is why we brought you on, because otherwise we'd have to bring your opponent on. But as a Republican, where do you come down on the president's comments questioning vote integrity?
Well, I can really only speak for our voting integrity in Wisconsin, mm-hmm. and I believe Wisconsin does an absolutely excellent job running elections. I think we've got a lot of fail-safes in place. I think that we couldn't make it any easier for our voters to participate in our process. I have very, very strong faith in how we conduct our elections here in Wisconsin.
If somebody heard what the president said and said, I want to come and observe the election, how does that work? In other words, is that something they have to arrange in advance, or can they just come and watch?
No, election observers can it's a kind of a normal thing. They can be at polls. What they do need to do is they need to check in with the chief inspectors and identify themselves. They need to be able to wear identification that they're, and they're allowed to they're not allowed to speak on their phone. They're not allowed to speak with voters as far as the electioneering of any type. They're not allowed to wear any type of a, for example, they couldn't wear a candidate's hat or short or any or anything like that.
Sure.
The word observer, that's exactly what it means, is observer. They are there to just simply observe the process.
Hey, Deanne Cook, I know you have to get back to work. I really appreciate you joining us for the time you could break free today. Just one more question for you before we say goodbye. If someone chooses to vote in person, how will that experience look different so that the votes can be safely cast this year?
Well, our municipalities here, is, again, speaking for Barron County, have done really an excellent job with getting things in place to make their polling places safer. They've put up a lot of plexiglass. They're using one-time pens, a lot of them. There's just a lot of sanitizing. Just they really put a lot of effort into making the whole voting experience safer. A lot of them will obviously have markers in place for keeping social distancing. They put a great deal of time and effort into this, and I really applaud that.
Deanne Cook, certainly appreciate the time you've taken today with us, and I've learned a lot, and that's a lot of fun. Thanks so much. Best wishes on a smooth election night.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
That's Deanne Cook. She's the clerk of Barron County, the county clerk. Also with us today are Sarah Godlewski. She's Wisconsin State Treasurer, also a member of the Vote Safe Wisconsin Coalition, and Ellen Oakes, who is co-president of the League of Women Voters of the Greater Chippewa Valley. Do you fear for the integrity of the 2020 election? Are you confident you'll know the winners on election night? Your questions, your opinions, all welcome at ideas@wpr.org or ideas@wpr.org or 800-228-5615. That number again, 800-228-5615. We have Lee from Shell Lake on the line. We'll get to his question after the break. I'm Dean Kallenbach, and this is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We're back now on The West Side talking about voter access and voter integrity in Western Wisconsin. Our guests today are Ellen Oakes. She's with the League of Women Voters of the Greater Chippewa Valley. And also Sarah Godlewski. She's the state treasurer of Wisconsin, and she's also a member of the coalition Vote Safe Wisconsin. Good to have both of them along with us. And also like to welcome Lee, who's joined us and calling us from Shell Lake. Lee, thank you for joining us today.
Yes, good morning. I just wanted to say that I submitted my absentee ballot request on the 24th of September, and nothing ever happened. Finally, last Thursday, I went to the city clerk and voted in person. But as far as the absentee ballot is concerned, that just didn't happen.
Wow.
I don't know why.
Yeah. Sarah Godlewski, have you heard any news of that sort of thing happening this time around where people have asked for absentee ballots and they just didn't show up?
I had a similar experience back in the April election where I went to submit my, tried to request my absentee ballot and nothing happened. And what I realized is that I actually didn't include my ID as part of that process. You did?
Yes, and also I signed it and I dated it and dropped it in the mail, and that's the last ever that ever happened to it.
Yeah, I know that sometimes there are there can be an occasional glitch here in the process, but that would be a really good question for your clerk. But I guess what it comes down to is you submitted your ballot, so your voice is going to be counted.
That's true.
Yeah, appreciate Lee, appreciate the call and the story, because I got to think that's a story that others probably share. And is there something, Ellen Oakes, is there something that voters can do if they're in a situation like that? Now, at this point, what Lee did is he went to his clerk's office and voted, and that's certainly allowed and an acceptable thing to do. And obviously, it's too late to, you know, probably send for a ballot like that. But is there a way for people to check to see if they are on the list of people who have sent ballots?
So glad you asked me.
Oh, good.
If Lee requested his ballot on myvote.wi.gov, he should have noticed that you can come back in after you've requested the ballot to watch the progress of what is happening to that ballot, you know, whether it's been sent out and so forth. So that is a good way, if you have access to the internet, we never used to have this, so this is wonderful.
Yeah.
However, he did the right thing by calling his municipal clerk and saying, I still haven't, you know, I don't have it, I can't do anything about it, what would you recommend? And I'm sure the clerk would set up a time so that he could vote absentee early, as Deanne said, and that would be the best solution.
Always great to learn from our listeners here on Wisconsin Public Radio. If you'd like to join the conversation, 800-228-5615 is one way to do it, 800-228-5615. Or you can email us at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Ellen Oakes, I mentioned that the League of Women Voters has a 100-year history as of this year. What about the League has made you interested in being a part of it?
Well, you know, there was a lot of excitement going on in 2017 about various issues, different people were organizing gatherings to talk about things like groundwater pollution and CAFOs and other things. I've been interested in local government for a long time. I served on our county board of supervisors for quite a while, that drew me in. Then we began to organize a chapter of League of Women Voters. There had not been one in our area since the 1980s, and it just seemed like time to have an organization that would bring things like this to public attention, give people a chance to talk about them, and to hear from people who knew about them. So that interested me when I was in on the original organization of our chapter. I was given the job of setting up forums about informational things like that, and also forums about candidate forums. We had a sheriff's election and five candidates for it, and that particular forum went down in history for us as being a huge turnout of interest. And this was my experience until it was time for a new set of co-presidents, and I got persuaded. So that's why I am where I am now.
Back before the Reagan administration changed, I've been around long enough to have been involved in this, but back before the Reagan administration changed the rules that forbid broadcasters from staging political debates, TV and radio stations relied heavily on the League of Women Voters to put on such events that broadcasters could then cover for our listeners. It was okay for us to cover the debate, we just couldn't stage the debate. The Reagan administration changed that, and radio and television stations started to sponsor debates and actually hold them. And again, you know, we've done several of them already this year. Ellen Oakes, talk about how the League of Women Voters is involved in elections and government mostly today.
Well, it's pretty much as advocates for fair operation of things like the elections, We choose issues that we get involved in, but we are not partisan. We do not support individual candidates. We do not support individual parties. We're usually looked at as the opposition by whichever party is in power because we keep raising uncomfortable questions. But I like that about League of Women Voters, mm-hmm. that we are trying to make sure the process is fair and the outcome serves the needs of the people of Wisconsin.
So, Sarah Godlewski, you're a current state office holder. You're the treasurer for the state of Wisconsin. In reading your biography, you're an Eau Claire native, but your involvement with Vote Safe Wisconsin's not your first activism when it comes to voting rights. If I'm reading it correctly, your interest in this subject dates back to your college days when you lobbied for changes in absentee ballot laws in Virginia. Talk about that experience, and how does that relate to what we're going through today?
Yeah, so when I turned 18, I actually went to college in Virginia, and I remember it was the year 2000. It was a big presidential, and I really struggled getting information. I was a new college student, and I was told I couldn't necessarily register in Virginia to vote because I wasn't a permanent resident, even though I had moved my life there as a student, but yet a lot of confusion on information on where do students' rights lie with regard to residency and voting. And so a group of students across the state got together to really talk to the legislature about changing the absentee ballot rules to allow students who live on campus to actually qualify and to make it easy for them to do that. So registering to vote, whether it's online or getting access to do that on campus. So it was my first wake-up call when I realized just a few months before the election I wasn't really sure how I could vote or where I could vote, and there was a really big gap in information for students on how to do that.
I got to think this pandemic is multiplying that confusion as far as college students who are live outside their state or at least outside their district or frankly just don't live at home anymore. Do you think that the education efforts as far as voting goes have reached those individuals so that they're getting a chance to weigh in on this year's election?
From my viewpoint, absolutely. I mean, I have talked with literally dozens of organizations across the state that have permanent organizers talking to people about voting, making sure they know how to vote, where to vote. In fact, in some places, I have heard stories where someone has been turned away, but not for the right reasons. And so they were able to go back and actually talk to them about why this person can register to vote. And so I think there's been a lot of tools and resources. And Ellen, I mean, the League of Women Voters have been critical in disseminating information, not just to people across the state, but to students.
We have really pivoted during pandemic times to using more social media, videos, written instructions, and a huge part of our operation is our voter service. It's out there registering new voters all the time. It used to be that those people would go to public places where there were crowds of people and get lots of registrations.
Yeah.
We can't do that now, so we're changing our methods there too, and we established a means of getting absentee ballot information out to all of the libraries in our 5-6 county area: Plum City, Alma, Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls, Menominee, Colfax, Elk Mound, Durand, Pepin, Spring Valley. They all have stations at the library about absentee ballots and voting. And now I know libraries have been on and off again about being open, but that was a very helpful thing to do. We also took that information and to some senior living operations, just trying to get it out there so people could get more information about how to register and how to vote. And high schools, we're in contact with the high schools. We've sent the high schools these videos and written instructions so that the teachers can get them out to the students. Young people are kind of funny. A 19-year-old said to one of our voter service people that he wasn't going to vote yet because he was too young and inexperienced, and his vote wouldn't make a difference anyway. We need to counteract that idea and create a culture of voting. That's a lot of what we do.
That's the voice of Ellen Oakes. She's co-president of the League of Women Voters of the Greater Chippewa Valley. Also with us today is Wisconsin State Treasurer Sarah Godlewski of Eau Claire. She's also part of the Vote Safe Wisconsin Coalition. And Sarah Godlewski, talk about Vote Safe Wisconsin and what it's working on to meet the goals of secure mail-in voting and safe in-person voting.
So as a bipartisan coalition, and I think that's one of the things that we're so proud about, is that we have people working across the aisle because elections are so important, is really making sure that Wisconsinites have the information and the resources they need. As I mentioned earlier on today's call, that the pandemic and the April election was a wake-up call that there was a lot of confusion. And so elected leaders wanted to step up and say, how can we provide information and use our platforms and our relationships to help educate and meet people where they are? And so that's a lot of what we've been doing, is providing information about, you know, where do you go to get more information, like myvote.wi.gov. How do you register? How do you track your ballot? And so it's been primarily an outreach and education effort for us.
So you mentioned VoteSafe is a bipartisan effort. Republicans and Democrats have endorsed it, including two legislators, a legislator and a member of Congress on opposite parties, Republican State Senator Kathy Bernier, Democrat U.S. member of Congress Ron Kind. With so much partisan division now, including lawsuits about how and when we can vote that we hear about every day, one in Minnesota that was decided on by a federal court yesterday, in fact, why do you think VoteSafe Wisconsin has this bipartisan support?
Because voting is just an absolute cornerstone of our democracy, and we want to make sure every Wisconsinite can submit their ballot and know how to do that. And so it's really critical to our democracy, and as elected leaders, we know that firsthand. And so making sure Wisconsinites have that information to do so.
State Treasurer Sarah Godlewski, also a member of the Vote Safe Wisconsin Coalition, is with us, as is Ellen Oakes from the Greater Chippewa Valley chapter of the League of Women Voters. You can join the conversation at ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org, or call us at 800-228-5615. That's 800-228-5615. If you have a story about your voting experience this year or what you expect to see at the polls, are you going to go in person? Or is that an experience that you treasure, and even to the point where you might risk a little more social contact than we've been experiencing? I'm Dean Kallenbach. This is The West Side on the Ideas Network. We are back talking about the election, specifically about voting, voter integrity, voter rights, and all sorts of things like that. Everything having to do with voting, we're talking about today. And you can join us, 800-228-5615, 800-228-5615, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Our guests are Ellen Oakes. Ellen is the Greater Chippewa Valley Chapter co-president of the League of Women Voters, and Sarah Godlewski. She's the state treasurer for Wisconsin, also a member of the Vote Safe Wisconsin Coalition. So if you've listened to all the legislative debates that have dominated this show for the past 4 months, you'll know that the legislature that comes into office next year will be charged with drawing the new maps for legislative and congressional districts in Wisconsin for the next 10 years. It's the question we got most, and by far the question we got most from callers during those debates was, what are you going to do about maps? Ellen Oakes, the person who shares the presidency of the League of Women Voters of the Greater Chippewa Valley, with the person you share co-presidency with is Anne-Marie McClellan. She's on the People's Maps Commission, which is she's one of nine members on the People's Maps Commission, and that's been appointed by Governor Evers to hold hearings and submit legislative maps to the legislature in 2021. So what stance is the League taking on redistricting?
The League of Women Voters is very involved in the redistricting argument. We feel that we need to go to a model similar to Iowa's, where it's a nonpartisan group establishing the lines without any information about how people have voted in the past. That is the key piece. Unfortunately, when you give the ability to draw the lines to either party, that party tends to want to promote its own interests. And it's the fox watching the chicken house, basically. It is true that there's practically nobody out there that doesn't have ideas or a leaning towards one party or another, or liberal party or whatever. We have our biases, but if the people who are adjusting the maps are using actual communities to decide how to lay out the maps and not whether people have voted Republican, Democrat, or whatever, then the results are much more likely to be fair. Over the years, Wisconsin hasn't done too badly some of the time until recently, but that's because we have computers now. It makes it easier to really fine-tune the gerrymandering, and we need to change that. It's going to be very hard. the legislature doesn't have enough interest in doing it unless we bring to their attention how much Wisconsin people want this done. And that's what the league is trying to do. By the way, I didn't get a chance to mention our own website that gives voting information. It's vote411.org. And that's a place where you can get a lot of the same information you can get from myvote.wi.gov, but you can also find out what's on your ballot, upcoming debates, and you can find out what the candidates who are running for office have, the information that they have sent us to put on that website. So that's a good resource.
So it's vote and then the numerals 411.org?
That's right.
Super. Okay, thank you for sharing that.
Sure.
Yes, go ahead, sir.
This Fair Maps issue is incredibly important in Wisconsin because we saw in 2011 that politicians were picking their districts rather than people picking their politicians. I mean, that's the way the process should be set up. And look, most Wisconsinites agree. I mean, over the past decade, counties across our state have been taking this within their own hands to put referendums on their local ballots to say, do you want to see Fair Map Commission? And of our 72 counties, 51 counties in the state of Wisconsin have said, yes, we want fair maps. And that's about 80% of Wisconsin's total population that believes this is something that's really, really important. And so as we look into 2021 and the governor's work on that Fair Maps Commission representing kind of having nine people to say, we really need to think through this and we need to make sure that we have nonpartisan civil servants that are using census data to draw maps, I think it's really critical for our democracy moving forward in Wisconsin.
In 2011, we had a Republican governor, Scott Walker, had just been elected, and a Republican Senate and a Republican Assembly. And again, that was that allowed those lines to be drawn in ways that some people consider gerrymandered, that some people feel weren't fair or gave Republicans an advantage. In this coming session, because Governor Evers' term doesn't expire until 2022, he will have veto power over maps that he feels are too far off. So don't we have an opportunity for checks and balances without this artificial group coming in to make a bipartisan, some would say supposedly bipartisan, but a bipartisan effort to for maps that have been drawn in ways other than the legislature hiring people to do their own maps?
Well, I think it would be a lot cheaper to go the route of the Iowa model. The 2011 redistricting cost us $4 million.
Yeah,
and I think in addition to cost, I mean, if you look at those records, they were people that were drawing those maps in back rooms where data, like information was going back with literally that district where they were saying, take this city, take that city. And it was literally politicians drawing those maps, and that's clear. And, I mean, I think about the election that I was a part of in 2018. I mean, Wisconsinites voted for all five constitutional officers to be Democrats, but yet the legislature did not change. I mean, out of the 99 seats in the Assembly, Republicans took 63 of those seats and Democrats took 36.
The other thing that comes out in that, Sarah, and I'm sure you were going to say this too, if a legislator knows that he or she is secure in his seat, he doesn't have to listen to his district.
Right, right. And I think what Wisconsinites will tell you is that they just want the system that's fair. And so I think the best way to do that, and I applaud, Ellen being a part of this commission, is that the governor has brought together nine people. There's eight congressional districts. Each have a representative, and they're doing eight listening tours across the state because they want to listen to what Wisconsinites are saying about this process to make sure their voice is heard. And I really believe at the end of it, the recommendations about replicating maybe something similar to Iowa will come true. And we have continued to see that not just today, but in the past with these counties passing these similar referendums.
Yeah, for clarification, and I stumbled around a little bit, but it's Ellen's co-president, Anne-Marie McClellan, who is one of the nine members of the People's Maps Commission. Let's shift a little bit back to absentee ballots. Data from the April primary shows that 23,000 absentee ballots were rejected, some because they weren't filled out correctly or didn't have proper witness information included. Ellen Oakes, what more could be done to educate voters and make sure their ballots are counted?
Well, a lot of the rejected ballots were by beginners, people who had never cast an absentee ballot before. And I think we're just going to keep, you know, pounding on what is required to correctly fill out an absentee ballot. It really does look confusing to a first-time voter. But once you've, you know, looked it over and especially if you've had certain things pointed out to you, like you need your witness to put down their address, or you're disqualified. Things like that can be remedied. And in fact, if you're watching your ballot on myvote.wi.gov, there will even be a flag saying your ballot has missing information, and you can contact your municipal clerk and resolve that before the election count. So I think we're going to make progress on this as people get more accustomed to it.
You know, the one thing we haven't really talked a lot about yet are poll workers. And, you know, my experience has been when I go to the polls, it's those same cool folks that are there every time doing it. They're not all young. And some of them are probably in age groups or in health conditions where they are subject to the ravages that this pandemic can instill on people. Governor Evers announced last week that the National Guard, Wisconsin National Guard, will serve as poll workers across the state in response to a critical shortage. Sarah Godlewski, do you have a sense of where the need is there?
I do not, Dean, but I know one of the things that I've been hearing. I actually just did a campus tour not too long ago where I was at River Falls, La Crosse, and Eau Claire campuses, and I was really impressed with the young people who were stepping up and saying that they were volunteering as poll workers because they believed it was their civic duty, and they know that there was a need. And so I think, too, what we're going to see, in addition to maybe this unique position with the National Guard, that we are developing a new set of volunteers to help carry our elections forward.
Ellen Oakes, are you hearing anything about how things here in western Wisconsin are going as far as the poll workers being available for Tuesday?
Yes, I have. We had an extra president's call from our executive director of League of Women Voters Wisconsin, Deborah Cronmiller, just this week, and she was saying that in general across the state, more poll workers have been recruited and polls are well staffed. There is still some problem with the you know really urban areas, and that's where I think the National Guard might prove really useful. But in the spring, this all happened so suddenly. And there was just no time to figure out how to train new people in. That was a good deal of the problem in the spring, but we've had some time to look at that now.
More examples of heroes in this pandemic, I think.
Yeah.
At this point in time, it's too late, most likely too late, for mailed ballots to make it to the clerk's office in time to be counted on Tuesday. The postmark thing's gone away. That's the U.S. Supreme Court. That's not changing. So how can voters who still have their absentee ballots return them in time? And Ellen Oakes, why don't you start?
Well, the first thing I would do is call my municipal clerk to see if I could get it to the clerk or to a drop box that's official in time today. That would be a really good way to do it. But the other way to do it is to take that absentee ballot in on voting day. If mm-hmm. all else fails, if you've just put it off too long, on Tuesday, you can take that absentee ballot in and turn it in at that time.
Oh, okay. One big change from the last presidential election has been this popping up of official drop boxes where individuals can file their absentee ballots, and they're sanctioned, secure boxes, make sure they get it on time. There were very few of them in 2016, but the Wisconsin Elections Commission says there are now more than 500 around the state. Ellen Oakes, do you expect that drop boxes are a trend that's here to stay even after the pandemic?
Yes, I do think so. It's a very convenient way of doing it. Our township built it into their front door of the town hall.
So it's going to be there.
It's going to be there.
The people, technology, information, know-how, they're all needed for elections. Sarah Godlewski, your office, you're the state treasurer. You work with the financial resources needed for elections in Wisconsin. Do you see gaps in resources for ensuring accessible and safe elections in western Wisconsin and throughout the state?
Well, it's a fun question, Dean, because I think whenever you ask anybody, do you need more money, the answer is yes. I always need more money. How much can you give me?
Yeah.
So I think that goes without saying. We can always put more resources to helping our elections. But that being said, I do think, you know, Wisconsin did get money through the CARES Act to help with absentee, expanding voting locations. So we did get, I believe it was $7 million from the federal government to address these specific needs. And I know, too, that local governments are doing everything they can. Our 72 county clerks and our over 1,400 municipal clerks are hard at work. And when you talk to them, they feel really secure about the process that they've developed. We have good laws in place. And if you ever have any questions, you can go to myvote.wi.gov. And as we've been talking about throughout the hour, this website has so much information about where to vote, where a drop-off location is, are you registered, you can register the day of, and what you need to bring. So I encourage listeners to please visit myvote.wi.gov. It's a great resource to learn more about how to ensure your voice and your vote is counted this November.
We'll make sure that website is dropped into our page when we archive this program, as well as the website that you referenced earlier, Ellen Oaks, and I'll give you another chance to do that. But as we wrap up here, voting technology and methods aren't uniform across the country. We're talking about resources. Ellen Oaks, you've helped purchase voting machines in the past. So how does that work? Who chooses and pays for that equipment?
Well, the municipalities buy the equipment. When I was on the county board, it was in 2003 when we purchased the machines that we have now. So actually we'll be looking into replacing them at some time in the not-too-distant future. There was grant money available at that time for those machines. And I remember the process. It was very interesting. It was very practical and sensible, and our equipment is reliable. It is not connected to the internet, so it's not going to be hackable in that way, and there will be paper ballots to back it up. And that's, I'm sure, the kind of choice that the county clerks and municipalities will make the next round too.
Ellen Oaks, one more time, the website that you wanted to share.
The website, vote411.org, a really good website full of information for voters.
Ellen Oaks. And
that Dropbox thing, Dean?
Yes, I've got about 10 seconds.
Yeah, don't use the Dropbox on voting day.
Okay.
Take your ballot in on voting day.
Very good. Thank you. Catherine Thomas produced today's show. Thanks to Kate Spranger for jumping in as a last-minute replacement for on-air production. Bonnie Clark and Sue Johnson help with the transcription. Patrick Eichen spearheads publicity. Don't forget to vote. I'm Dean Kallenbach. Thanks for listening.